gentlemen, welcome to the season finale of the Tilt Space. We wanted to put a bow on our season of tilting and sweating, and so we thought we'd hop on here for a special Thursday afternoon edition, a wrap-up. Joe Holka put together a graph of our winnings this year. So here I am, Joe Holka, Michael Leone. It feels like an eternity since we last tilted and sweated a game together.
Feels like a long time, man. Like, I know it's only been like a few weeks, but so much has happened. I know Pete's in like the whole world of where even like 12 hours at a time now can be a big difference in the Top Shot world, right? But from football, we're just getting ready for one game this week. So it's been a little bit lighter, but you got to get your Super Bowl content out. But we had to do at least some sort of post-mortem, right? Leone, you're the one I feel like I haven't talked to in forever. What have you been up to?
Oh man, you know, I've been, it does feel like it's been longer than 2 weeks. Yeah. That's for sure. I guess it hasn't even been a full 2 weeks, which is crazy, but I've been working on some NBA stuff I've been meaning to get to, already working on some best ball rankings for this year. So, you know, it never stops one thing into the next, but it's been fun to take a little bit of a step back and not, you know, the grind of an NFL season gets to you a little bit, and it's nice to kind of be able to look at some stuff bigger picture, which I'm looking forward to this offseason.
Yeah. So today we just kind of wanted to go through maybe some stuff that worked for us, maybe things we do differently going forward. Joe put together a graph of our overall results, which I think we can get pulled up here in a second, and are pretty, Leone said it in our Discord chat, but it is a GPP graph. It is a very good realistic expectation of what GPP life looks like if you are playing smart, but also knowing the downswings are going to come with that.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a very sad graph. It's very simple. Obviously, our start was great, and we'll get to it in a second. But yeah, the first thing Leone said when he saw it is like, oh, that's kind of normal, even though at the end of the year didn't go so well for us. But like, not a ton of like really like terrible weeks. I mean, outside of when we played Dak in the Thunderdome, like it was pretty much just a pretty natural downwards trend line at that point, but we'll get to it. Leone, are you doing okay after the Bills loss? Everyone wants to talk about that in the chat right now. Are you doing all right, man?
I'm doing all right. You know, it was disappointing the way they went out, but I'm holding up okay. I'm still looking forward to the Super Bowl, even though they're not in it. It was definitely surreal that like they were in the AFC Championship game, and I was watching that, you know, given what the previous 20 years has been like. But yeah, bringing it back to our graph, I mean, that's GPP life. You know, you hope for a bank, and if you're not banking, it's slow downticks. And I do think, you know, if someone just looked at a portion of that graph, they'd be like, wow, you guys suck. You lost 10 weeks in a row. What are you doing? But, you know, we said from the beginning that was, you know, our plan was to play to win and not worry about, you know, the volatility of things, let the volatility take care of itself. And you mentioned the DAC week. What's crazy is, we were really close to 3 weeks in a row of smashing. As if I remember, we had the winning dome team that week with a Watson stack, and we correctly got off it when we saw how ownership had moved and everyone in higher stakes kind of galaxy bring themselves off a Dallas game. Not to get too into the weeds, but it just goes to show you how, you know, even if you make the right decision sometimes, I mean, we could have easily have won the Thunderdome that week, and who knows what would have happened.
Man, the other thing I continue to be thankful for too is just the order of when we got our win, because, you know, when you look at this graph, so we went from our high point at, you know, 67,500 all the way down to a final bankroll of 32,000. So almost a spread there of what, you know, 3,400 or 34,000. Imagine if we started down and we were $34,000 in the red before getting that spike. I mean, just psychologically, that is so much differently or so much different of an experience than how it transpired for us. And a lot of being a GPP player, and Mike, you've done this for years, and Joe as well, like that psychological battle is a huge component of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, 2 weeks in a row, we did lose money. We lost about what, a third of our bankroll, pretty close to it, at least in the first couple weeks. Stayed the course, man. I think that's at least good. But you're right, Pete. Like if we would have just continued on that early downtrend, it's much easier to continue to play correctly, I guess, when you have that big win in there. We're kind of playing with house money for a lot of the season.
It's a mental grind for sure when you're losing, because there's so much variance involved whether you're winning or losing, that it's really hard to evaluate if you're playing well, and that's the thing you want to get away from, is you don't want to feel like you're just giving away money and you're just dumping money and you're not playing smartly and you don't have any chance to win. So yeah, the term process over results gets thrown around, and it's easy to say that, but it's tougher in practice to really identify. You know, if you're playing MME, it can be a little bit easier because you've got a lot more data points. You'd be like, am I getting top 1% teams? And maybe I'm just running unlucky on banking. But when you're playing 1 to 3 lineups like we're doing a week, it can be really difficult to tell if you're even playing right.
Yeah. And Willis in the chat asked, do you guys think you would have done anything different if you would have started on a huge downswing at first? My thought is, I think our quality of play in the lineups we were building would have stayed solid. I have faith that we would have continued to make good lineups. I do think we would have really tightened up our contest selection, and we wouldn't have been playing in as big of contests as we were. Do you guys agree with that?
I think so.
100%.
Yeah.
We weren't going to lose more than the 15K. You know, that was our goal. We're playing this as if this is our total bankroll for the season. So we would have tightened up.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of nice in some ways, too, that like that one big week that we had ended up being like that team that we had in the 1500, right? If it ended up being one of the teams that we had in one of the lower contests, maybe that wouldn't have been enough to bank. So I guess getting somewhat lucky in that way, obviously running pretty bad in some of the weeks where we did scale up, hurts a little bit more. But we really only had, is this correct? You think, Leone, we had one profitable week down the stretch? That is rough, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the way contests are structured, even when you're playing the stuff we're playing, it's tough, especially if you're building the way we're building, which is, you know, let's bank or lose, so to speak. I think that was the Hopkins Hail Mary week. We had a good week and we got up there, and we had another week.
We had another one
where the Tyreek Hill Tampa Bay week was, we were winning stuff after, and we're like, you know, just if Kansas City is just, you know, just normal, we'll be. One half of football, one quarter of football into it. It's like, can we even min cash? So it's wild. And, you know, even like not just looking at the bankroll management type stuff, as far as the types of teams we made, do you guys have any, you know, big picture takeaways as to things you think we did well or things we could do better?
I think one of the things for sure, and then you can go ahead, Pete, was that like I need to get a little bit better at ownership at like the higher stakes versus just like any projections out there, because it is a lot different. Like I know you that know that, Leone, and that's probably why you had so much success in the Thunderdome this year, is because you know it's totally different where the ownership's going to be. So like, we felt really good about that week with Dak in the Thunderdome, just because we got him so low. We all loved the Deshaun Watson stack, like you said. I feel like we had that in the hopper a couple weeks. We definitely talked ourselves out of some stacks throughout the year, but that, I mean, that's going to happen. You can't really be too frustrated about that. But I very rarely think that there were weeks where we opened up some of our larger contests and we're like super surprised by ownership. Maybe I just have some, I mean, maybe I just forget the bad weeks and remember the good weeks, but I feel like we did pretty well. And that's something that we, I want to continue to get better at. But this year, I think we did a pretty good job at it, at least for our higher stakes stuff. You have any other thoughts, Pete?
No, I mean, I think the only thing that I would have maybe have done differently, but wasn't even possible, was just having more check-ins throughout the week of kind of where we were at. Like we all are doing content elsewhere. We have our takes, but getting our kind of hive mind together. And we ended up like, not that it was an issue, but I just think if we had devoted more time, you know, our Tilt Space office hours, hey, where we're at, what things are we looking at? It just helps us identify some of those things. And yeah, that's the only thing, but it's like, we're so busy. We don't have time to devote all this extra time to building these lineups. So what ends up happening is we have all of our own ideas. Mike is, you know, deep doing his own projections. I'm looking at projections everywhere. Joe's talking to lots of people. So it was like, how do we get our collective mind synthesized into really good ideas that result in really good lineups?
Yeah. And there's a happy medium to be had there, where we've talked about this on the show. We don't want to build too early in the week and get anchored to stuff, because we want to be able to react. But at the same time, you don't want to sit down and make lineups, you know, an hour before lock and not be remotely on the same page. So I think some weeks it worked out fine. I think other weeks, and this goes to what Joe said, weeks where maybe we saw differences in where ownership would be, it was a little bit harder, because obviously if you have different ideas on ownership. You're going to have different ideas of the guys you want to play and the leverage you want to get. For me, the one thing I want to try and do better at, you know, watching Andrew Wiggins play GPPs, he plays totally different than me, but he does a really good job of sometimes figuring out ways to get in, you know, play the best plays, but in a unique way. And I know Pete and I in particular really enjoy being contrarian and getting that leverage. So I do want to be more cognizant of ways we can make lineups, you know, based on the week. You're not going to do it every week, but some weeks where, okay, this guy is just a really good play. How do we get him in and, you know, not overthink the fact that he's going to be too owned? You know, a lot of times for me last year was like, okay, this guy's X ownership. That's too high. I'm just not going to play him. And not that that was wrong. I think most of the time that's right. But I do think there were probably a few times where the thought on that could have been a little bit more complex.
Was that week that you guys qualified for the live final, right? Where you guys both played Hurts, but also got in like the three studs when most people were trying to pay up a little bit at quarterback and play two of the three studs, right? So that ended up, you guys had a ton of chalky players in that lineup, but the construction of it was much different. Is that kind of what you're kind of alluding to there?
Yeah, I actually didn't have any of those players because I went full Galaxy Brain. It was kind of weird. And Wiggins had all three of them. Wiggins smashed, and it was like Kelsey, Derrick Henry, Devontae Adams.
Right.
Right. Yeah. He smashed those guys in, and they were chalky. That, and there was also a week even in the playoffs where I think it was the Cleveland Browns KC game where Mahomes, Kelsey, and Tyreek Hill together were owned on like 3% of lineups or something. And I was like, you know, I wasn't playing KC because I thought they'd be overowned. And individually, all the guys, you know, Tyreek and Kelsey were like 50% owned each, which seemed, you know, even on a four-game slate, too high. But when you look at a highly correlated, highest upside stack on the slate, and it's like, oh, you know, people aren't playing these guys together. Maybe there is room to kind of play these guys in a unique way. And it's tough because for me, sometimes I think people focus too much on just their lineup itself being unique and not duped. But for me, I care more about the leverage of the total lineup, you know, whether it's unique or not. So that's where sometimes I have a tough time playing those chalky guys, even if I know the actual construction itself isn't going to be duped.
Yeah. And I think those are the two, you know, thinking about the two levels of, you know, being contrarian. One on, yeah, maybe I'm on the same build as everyone else, but instead of paying 9,000 for Henry, I'm going to pay 8,900 for Dalvin Cook. Or there's what that concept we've talked about with flipping the build on its head. Okay, everyone's paying up at running back. We're going to pay up for wide receiver and just get on new constructions too. So yeah, I think we did a good job this year of being contrarian, but not being crazy. And I think one of the things that helped me anchor that was just being in these smaller fields where you'd look at the projected points we were still getting in. Like our projected points were often as good as the chalky lineups. We're normally sacrificing what, 5-6 maybe total projected points, but in return, we're getting 20-30% less cumulative ownership, which is massive.
Yeah, I think that's still something that like I'm still, I mean, I'll guys give you guys credit because I got a little bit more out of my comfort zone this year. I was probably playing way too much chalk in these small fields. I definitely was completely wrong about you need to correlate more the larger field it is. Like Leone basically just told me I was wrong and he was dead right that like these are the type of fields where you do want to kind of limit those decisions because you don't need the absolute nuts, right? So I think that we did a pretty good job of that. One of the things that I think we definitely could do better, and I'm with you, Pete, that like there's only so much time to build these lineups throughout the week, obviously on Sunday morning, but we definitely had a few weeks where we kind of hedged other things we were doing. Like we definitely had other action out there. I know Leone's playing a lot of stuff. Pete's playing a lot of stuff. There were some weeks where we're like, yeah, I don't have an AJ Brown yet. Let's throw him in there. You know what I mean? And it's easy to do that when it's something that's secondary to what we're all doing. But maybe next year we don't do that. I don't know. It's hard. It's easy to say, hard to kind of put into practice probably.
Yeah, it goes both ways. Cause the other thing about that I don't necessarily mind is it also kind of illuminates that it is possible to make good lineups from all different angles using different players, different games. And sometimes we would break ties in favor of like, look, we're doing tilt space at 6:30 Eastern. Let's have some guys in the late games. It doesn't mean we're sacrificing EV. We're just building around a different group and then going to make smart decisions like that. I mean, Blender is always the one that says you can start off your lineup with whoever you want. It's just each decision is then impacted by that first piece you put in the second piece. So to me, that was kind of a illuminating thing to realize, like, yeah, it might be considered hedging or whatever. This isn't our quote unquote favorite play, but we can still make a very good lineup that has similar expected value with this play that we haven't, you know, put as our number one with a bullet or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think as far as hedging goes, I was less concerned with us hedging on players that we didn't use in our own play, because I do kind of like the randomness of, hey, let's use this guy. People aren't using him. And, you know, I understand Joe's point too, though, where we probably want to think it out a little bit more. But I think where we went wrong on hedging sometimes was, you know, we kind of always had a different stack. And I know what Peter's saying is that you can build plus EV lineups in a different way. So maybe you can make four different stacks and four different plus EV lineups in different ways. And I think there are absolutely weeks, maybe the majority of weeks, where that's right. But if we find a week where we just think there's a really big edge somewhere, I think we should try to really maximize it. And it's hard to do because we want to spread out our bullets so we have something live on the show and we're not just absolutely dead. But there might be weeks where we can say, okay, this stack is just totally underowned. Let's run three iterations of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and what did you guys think overall based on our contest selection relative to bankroll size? I'm guessing that at the start of the season, we were probably ambitious, and then it was probably more in line with our bankroll what we were playing after that, save for the Thunderdome week.
I can't remember. Like, there's certain things that I'm struggling to, like, I know we scaled up certain weeks. There was a couple of weeks where we ended up playing like the 2K, didn't we, instead of the 1500, just because some of the structures were changing throughout the year. I'm like trying to remember, but we most of the time just played three teams. I know we kind of found out early that playing like five teams was just too much to handle on Sunday mornings, right? Do you guys feel that way too?
Yeah, I think 3 to 4 is probably the sweet spot. And once we get past that, I do think one thing we started to talk about at the end of the season was maybe mixing in FanDuel a little bit more based on, again, where we think the best opportunity is, you know, based on pricing, based on where the field's going to own stuff. As far as like our outlay each week, I thought we did a pretty good job of balancing, not being stupid, but still, you know, taking some shots and having some fun with it and giving us a real chance at something big. Peter can speak to this, but it is tough when you win a 50K week three or week four to start playing these tournaments that have, you know, 20K up top, even though they're good tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Joe, you, I think, ran hotter toward the end of the year with your personal stuff, with your dig showdown stuff. I don't want to speak for you, Leonie. A lot of my big wins were all front loaded early in the season, and then I completely cooled off. Was that ended up being similar for you, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing I really hit good at the end of the season was winning the qualifier, which, in a weird way, it was an awesome experience. It was a lot of fun, but, you know, I min-cashed the actual live event. So had that team, you know, been somewhere else. But it was really cool to do that. But if you look at my graph, there's not like a huge uptick when I hit that team. And I think that was it. Similar to our play, you know, that Hopkins week, I had a really good week. And then basically nothing until I won the queue. And that didn't end up really materializing into a lot.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, my graph looked different this year than most years, and that probably is just because I was trying to get a little bit more aggressive with being contrarian, kind of the way things are now. Normally, I do kind of have a pretty strong start before people adjust. Obviously, things throughout the season, it gets a little bit more efficient across the board. There's a lot of good content, a lot of good projections out there. This year, it had a terrible middle of the season. But honestly, like, if you take out Showdown in the end of the year, I was right there with you guys. Like, there was like probably 2 or 3 weeks that if it weren't for Showdown, I would have had losing weeks for sure, right? So I think that was at least good that I felt like I found some sort of edge in the 3 max small field and Showdown when a lot of people aren't prioritizing that. So I was like throwing that into like my allocation of like my action, and that ended up saving me a couple of weeks, but also kind of diversifies you because it's a completely different game, right? So like there were certain times where I'd have access to that Showdown slate later on that I just didn't have any interest in those guys on main. So it was kind of a hedge in some ways, and just adding that to my games this year was good for the end of the year until the AFC Championship game, which was a complete disaster. But outside of that.
Yeah. For me this year, it was going back to the psychological thing. It was really helpful. I think I learned a lot too of viewing these slates in the context of a much longer time horizon. Like now thinking about my DFS play over, you know, 100 slates or 200 slates and just making good decisions in and out, trying to detach myself from the emotional volatility of that. And the best way to do that is to play within your means, play within an amount that you expect to lose, and then you can, you're at peace to make the best possible decisions. And it's been encouraging for me, even through my downswing through the rest of the season, to see I'm still hovering over where I was at my highs. Like, I am basically getting enough back to just stay level, but giving myself our shots on goal to bink a tournament, but not, like, my graph hasn't even been as steep. Maybe that means I'm not playing aggressive enough, but it has been nice to know that it is possible to stay in the game and give yourself chances to win again without having to have the mentality of like, we're on a heater, let's fire at everything or whatever, because that could be tempting as well.
This is a little bit off topic, but you know, when Joe was talking about trying to get better at the ownership and higher stakes and how it's different, you know, one thing that I had a light bulb on a little bit was the week that Darren Waller went nuts. And of course, it's amplified by the fact that he had an absurd score. It was the week versus the Jets where he scored 40, but he came in our stuff at like 5% owned. You know, people were winning GPPs that week with a 50% owned Anthony Firkser, who scored 10 points because Waller was so low owned that even the teams with Waller, some of them didn't run into the right combination and you could win without him. But was thinking of ownership then as a little bit more variable. I think sometimes we think of ownership as, okay, this is what it's going to be. You know, fantasy points were like, we know a guy can swing plus or minus, you know, 50% in his actual production, but ownership, we kind of look at like, these are the numbers, but like thinking through that as a range of outcomes too, where it was like, oh, we didn't think Waller would be 5%, but we sort of knew he wasn't going to be more than the 12% we thought he would be. So if we're looking at the range of outcomes, we would have been like, well, worst case scenario, we get him at 12% and it's not bad. You know, best case, maybe he falls off. So ownership in terms of like that is volatile too in projecting that.
One thing that's also trippy with that, and you know, you and Dink talk about that a lot on Established to Millions, with Dink playing, you know, primarily large field stuff, it's easier for him to dial in his exposures relative to the field because he has this bigger set. If we're playing three lineups, at max, your min, you know, a state, we're at 0%, 33%, 66%, or 100% with our exposures on these guys. And it's harder to dial in and say that Darren Waller example, say you'd want to middle it and we want to be at 10% or something. Well, we don't really have that option when you're playing three to four lineups. So your stands you're taking are actually more extreme relative to that projected ownership. And I think that makes it tough.
It definitely does make it tough. But there's advantages and disadvantages. I think that's a disadvantage. I think the advantage, though, is sometimes in MME, the best plays, the ownership, people spread out what they're playing. So these guys that were like, oh, we're going to fade, you know, so-and-so at 60% ownership. Well, when he's 25% in MME, it's like, maybe he's not a bad play. So there are parts that are harder to pull the trigger on, and then there are other things that are a little bit easier to pull the trigger on.
Do you guys think we did all right in late swap? It's always hard to tell because normally you'll have certain weeks where you feel like you completely saved yourself, but you'll have probably a lot more weeks where it just goes from bad to worst and it doesn't really matter, right? So I don't know. I think the hardest weeks for late swap for me, at least when we were talking through it, was on some of those teams that we knew we were trying to give ourselves some outs for later on if we were going to be doing the show at night, right? So how do you guys think we did in late swap overall? I don't know if we really had a big week after a late swap. Maybe a min cash here and there. I'm not really sure.
Felt like in terms of results, our late swap stuff all ended up kind of moot, where we were just for our group teams, at least. I think for my individual team, sometimes I was in similar spots, but maybe a little bit better. And it had more of an effect. So it's hard to evaluate in terms of results, but I thought we did a good job of being aggressive in terms of identifying, you know, this team is dead or most likely dead. I sometimes might have been too quick to say we're dead, the Waller week being one of them, where I was like, we don't have Waller, we're dead. And Waller wasn't even in winning lineup. So that was a lesson I learned. I almost learned it the hard way in the qualifier. I qualified for it too, where I got off Davante Adams and it turned out, you know, I really didn't need to, but we were definitely willing to kind of see where we were at and take some shots and not just be dead at lock because we didn't make swaps.
We did a good job too of taking advantage of a few of those situations where the mega chalk, but also the highest projected point guy on the slate, I think it was Adams once, Dalvin Cook another time, when they were playing late, just lock buttoning them in our lineups, knowing if things are good, we're going to let it ride with the best play. And if not, we left ourselves out for, you know, generally 2v2s off of some more chalky guys. And I think taking advantage of that level when knowing so much of the field isn't, maybe more so in our contests in the higher levels, but still just pushing whatever little edge we had there and allowing that information to dictate our decision. I thought we did a good job with that.
Do we want to talk about the super contest, the winner take all? I guess, spoiler alert, we did not take all.
Wait, what? I've been refreshing my email waiting for my share of
it goes through the Super Bowl, right? We're still live. We're still live. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Noel Fan, you are sick.
Good Noel. God. $100 yeah, super chat from Noel Fan. What a guy.
You know you're on a DFS heater. Not what a guy. What a heater.
Yeah.
You're just throwing around. Go buy some NFTs, Noel Fan.
Yeah, casual 300K. Last night with about 15K in action in NBA. Good for you, man. Good to see you crushing it. Thank you for that super chat. What a guy.
Thank you, Noel.
So what do you think next year in the betting side of things? Because I know we wanted this to be like a hybrid betting fantasy show. It was tough because we just were idiots and entered this contest. And, you know, we were kind of discouraged from the start because, you know, your chances are so slim. But I also feel like, man, we had a tough enough time getting our DFS picks in on time.
Yeah.
You know, if we throw on five picks of super contests we have to think through each week, that might be even tougher.
I mean, how many weeks was there where we just like threw it in there, didn't give it more than 5 minutes of thought, right? So that probably wasn't the best use of our resources for this one. I don't know.
I wonder. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I agree. I'm trying to think what would be both a fun way for us to do, you know, some betting in conjunction while, what were you going to say, Leonie?
Let's just bet a shitload of futures and have a future show a week before and we can track those.
We could.
Win totals, MVP.
That is a really good call. The futures bets, they're fun. It's easier to identify some mispricings in those. They don't get as beat up as much, and they're super fun sweats. I think I was telling you guys too, I every year with my buddies, we do collectively go in on some win totals, some guys to lead the league in receiving, and he sends out an email every week with the updates and how it's looking in comparison. It's just a fun collective sweat. So I love that idea. If we bet, you know, Tyreek Hill to lead the league in receiving yards and to be able to check in on that, what do you think, Joe?
I think that's a great idea. I think one of the things that I was definitely kind of FOMOing a little bit is when you guys were talking about, like, not even necessarily your best balls, but you guys had all this other kind of action going throughout the season. Like, it'd be cool to do some best ball stuff as a group. It'd be cool to do, like, even like some of the stuff on Underdog throughout the season. That's more of like a snake draft type of thing. There's a bunch of stuff I'm sure they're going to be doing with those new games. I think those type of games are really interesting. Maybe Pete could get us in contact with all of his friends in high places in Underdog. That'd be cool too. So there's a lot of different stuff we could do. I like the futures idea though.
But we could have a really good portfolio. And to piggyback what Peter said, I still remember Dink tells me this story about when he had a real job. He got his whole office to bet the over on the Tampa Bay Rays 1 year, their win total. And they would, I think they had post-it notes up and they would rip one off for every time the Rays won a game. And they ended up clearing the win total like really early, but it's just this communal fun type of thing. It's a long sweat. It seems perfect to replace the betting side of things, and we don't, you know, take up too much brain space throughout the week on it.
Joe, just think of all the overlay fun you could have with that.
This is true. That would be fun. I also, so one thing that I would like to do is to turn this into, like, I think even on Sundays, even if it's a much smaller contest than we normally play, I think we should build like a Sunday Night Football showdown team, like every week on stream. We did that a couple of weeks when we were tilting. I did it a couple of weeks when I was tilting like my own stuff and Leonie was busy winning everything in the Thunderdome. But like, it'd be fun to actually like put that in. Like, maybe that's the last thing we do before the end of the show is we build a showdown team. It's just like a smaller dollar one. Just give us something to look at, I guess, if things are completely terrible.
I feel like I just don't have the brain space.
That's why you're not playing as much in general, right? In showdown anymore, because there's only so much like brain power you have throughout the week.
Also, the field and the MME stuff has just gotten way sharper. So kind of what I was doing last year is just not working as much. Last year, you could just play at 5-1 on slots and people weren't doing it. And
I mean, MME is, we don't have to do MME. I'm talking like to do like max single entry stuff, small field, like similar to what we're doing for all the other stuff.
I'm down for that. And I do think someone actually asked about playing showdown, single entry, small field for the Super Bowl. And they were saying, should I even do it? Because there's so much variance. And, you know, while that's true, it's very hard to know like exactly how things are going to play out. I do think you get over time, again, think of this as like many, many slates. The ownerships really conflate, especially at captain in the small field stuff. You know, in MME, it's gotten pretty sharp where, you know, Mahomes, Kelce, Tyreek will be, you know, close, but people get a little more projections based in the small field stuff on showdown, where Mahomes is probably going to be way over owned in captain in small field stuff on the Super Bowl slate. So I do think we can apply some of the same concepts. So I don't mind doing that. I kind of wanted to do more of that since I'm not doing the MME stuff, but like still a way to participate in showdown.
I thought in the beginning that it was kind of just like not going to be that great just because there's so much variance involved in showdown in general. But like you exactly what we just said, some of the ownership, you start to like dig in a little bit, some of the smaller fields, the ownership is not great, right? It's so condensed. Like if you could blindly probably play some of these wide receiver ones, wide receiver twos, and some of these teams at captain and get a big time ownership discount. I'm not just talking about it because of Diggs. I just think that overall, there's a lot of people that are just still firing like quarterback captains into these, right? And like Leone, I've heard you talk about it before. Like there's plenty of slates where these wide receivers end up outscoring them. And especially if it's a small field, sometimes that's enough to beat all of like the quarterback captains in the small field. So I think it's something we could explore for sure.
I was going to say, I'm definitely down if I get a piece of all your Diggs showdown teams.
Just never play anything else but the Bills showdowns from now on. But yeah, I don't know. I guess ran really hot, man. That's all I can say. The 1 week that it was really big was literally when Andrew was like, who's this James Washington guy? He's like the same price as this guy, but he looks a lot cuter or something like that. It was absurd. Get him like 3% in small field.
As we wrap up here, do you guys think there's another... like, would you want to formalize the a bankroll challenge more specifically? Obviously, we just started out with our role and we kind of reference it, but we didn't have like set goals as far as benchmarks and stuff. Would that be something we would want to entertain? Like trying to take a 10K to 100K challenge? Or is it just there's so much volatility in a 16-week span that it might be a fool's errand for GPP play?
I mean, I think it's fun to say that's what we want to do, but I'm worried that maybe that would kind of screw up how we play if we don't play the right way, the right contests, if we're trying to, you know, especially end of the season, if we're really just trying to ascertain a certain amount. I kind of like what we did this year, you know, like let's start with 15K again. It's almost an interesting experiment too, to start with the same amount and see, okay, the order of events is going to be different than last year. It just... almost guaranteed to be, you know, maybe we start with that cold streak to start the year. You know, how do we react? You know, where does our 15K end up? And it lets us, you know, pocket those profits from this past season.
Well, yeah, originally I was like, oh, we should just like keep this thing going. We'll start with our 32K bankroll and see if we can get this thing up to 100K. But it might be a more interesting, like you said, experiment to kind of look at this graph versus next year's graph and see kind of the differences there. So I don't know. We'll have to give that some thought. Maybe I'll just send you everything back, Leone, that we split, and we'll just keep this bankroll, try and get up to 100K.
There we go. So guys, we really appreciate you joining in this season, sweating with us, the even on shitty Sundays for us, getting to have the tilt space, getting to commiserate with all of you has been a super fun time. I assume Mike and Joe feel similarly.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I felt like the chat though should have been more feisty towards the end of the season. You know, we had a good run where we would go back and forth about Derrick Henry. So, you know, bring the heat next year, chat.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the things that, like, we do a lot of shows, right, Pete? So this is, like, the one that was, like, okay, like, we can just kind of, like, it's not that we're not ourselves in other ones, but we can actually, like, it was so fresh after these slates that there was a lot of times I did not want to do this show, and I know you guys feel the same way, right? But it was fun, especially in the weeks where we had a little bit of a sweat to kind of watch that with you guys, obviously, with the chat that was growing throughout the entire year. I think we need to definitely... play up the us versus the chat thing though. They got a little bit too nice towards the end, I feel like.
Head-to-head GPP versus the chat.
Yeah. Are people just going to dupe our showdown teams, though, Pete? Like, we got to think about this. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. I don't know.
That's the problem, man. They want to dupe you. But yeah, let's, you know, if you guys are, you know, looking for some showdown content, Mike did a show the other day with Cody Main and Adam. Joe and I are going to be doing a couple shows this week. We're going to do one tomorrow at, we said 3 Eastern, Joe?
Yes.
3 Eastern on Joe's channel. And then we're going to do a follow-up one on Sunday at noon once we have kind of ownership further solidified and hopefully some of that injury news done there. And yeah, Joe, you also have a contest going on. I did a contest similar to this one where I was giving out entries, and now Joe is going to, what's the contest you're going to free roll people in?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous, man. I think I might have got a little bit aggressive. So Peter did similar format and it worked so well for him because I think it was like simple enough to where people were like, oh yeah, that's a no-brainer. But instead of doing every 200 subs, I'm doing every 400 subs because I guess where my channel's at and that sort of thing. So as of right now, I'm going to be free rolling someone in the $100 Hot Route Special, which is one of those special showdown contests for the Super Bowl, 200K. Up top for every 400 subs that I add in those 48 hours the video dropped yesterday. So I think there's still about a full day left for that one. All you got to do is just go in there, drop in the comments your username on DraftKings, also on Twitter. Just check out my YouTube, you'll see the video. It's pretty easy to find, but yeah, it'd be fun to free roll someone in that. Hopefully they can take it down. Pete, you ended up free rolling like 7 people in yours that week, right? I'm drawing dead to come near yours at this point.
Yeah, well, I had a huge help because Alex Santi over at Roto Grinders came in and matched mine, but we ended up giving out 10 total.
Nice.
There. So are you going to use the wheel? How are you going to do determine?
I was going to do a random number generator, but what's the wheel? I saw you guys do it on Top Shot. How does it work? Is it just the chat or how do you do it?
No. Yeah, you just put in like whatever, if you get a CSV export of all your comments or whatever, and just put the usernames and you just paste them right in the wheel, and it's just a funner representation.
That might be way better than what I was planning. I was planning on like literally like individually like just putting a number for every comment and going through. That seems like it's going to take a lot longer.
Well, I know how much you love the chat, just putting in random numbers in the chat, Joe. So that sounds right up your alley.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. It'll be right before we break down the showdown slate on my channel tomorrow, and then we'll have a little bit more context for the one on your channel on Sunday. So be a good time. We're not watching the Bills in the Super Bowl, which is a bummer, but outside of that, it should be good.
It's a bummer, but we will press on. Thank you guys again for a great season. Stay tuned on Live Movement. Lots of good stuff coming down the pipeline. We appreciate you guys. For Joe Holka, for Michael Leone, for Peter Overzet, this has been the season finale of Tilt Space.